Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K 12 Education Talk Radio. And we've got a special time today. We're doing the show at 3 in the afternoon on February 8th because we have a guest who's talking to us from Europe. And she had to work this morning, so she's got time tonight. And we'll probably have to put the kids to bed, maybe. Who knows? So we'll ask Michelle all about it. We're going to be talking today about her new book, which she wrote with Brian Dieters. And Brian, her co-author, who's a social studies teacher in Morton, Illinois, which is near Peoria. Okay, he couldn't be with us today, unfortunately. Okay, and so we've got Michelle here. And Michelle, they wrote a book called, this is for Times 10 Publications, and they wrote a book which is called Preventing Polarization. It's all about teaching civics in classrooms today. And it touches on SEL, et cetera, social emotional learning, how that all comes together to prevent polarization. So we're going to have a wonderful conversation with Michelle in just a few minutes. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. Ace-ed.org is the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education, our new issue of the magazine, Equity and Access Pre-K-12. Just go over to ace-ed.org, click on the cover of our online journal. It's a good issue because it's all about all the equity awards winners. Look at the National Equity Awards winners, both the educators, okay, and all types of people who work in schools, as well as a lot of companies, okay, who work so hard to create equity in pre-K-12 education. We honored all of them in the issue. And we also have a lot of stuff on there about SEL and teacher retention. And, of course, every podcast we've done is over at ace-ed, too. So please check it all out. Everything we do over there is free, including a subscription to the magazine. So take a minute and subscribe if you want. Certainly go over, take a look at it. And, all the way to Switzerland. Here's Michelle. Hi, Michelle. Larry's here.
Hi, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Are you in Switzerland today?
I actually flew into Florida because my brother had a baby.
How convenient. Well, I'm so glad you're here. Okay, it's terrific.
Yes.
All right, so Florida. So Florida and Switzerland, they look alike scenery-wise, don't they?
I have to say it was a bit bizarre coming from kind of some snowy Alps to some very hot weather.
And enjoy it while you're there and take a dip in the ocean. Where are you in Florida? That's great.
Just outside Tampa.
Okay, good, a beautiful city. Good enough. Okay, so that's great. And I hope you have a great time in the U.S. here. Okay? And
yeah,
tell us before we get in. Yeah, before we get into this, tell us a little bit about your background, okay? Please.
Sure. So I actually got started teaching in Virginia. I taught world history as well as civics. And then I ended up teaching abroad in Switzerland. Since then, I have kind of transitioned over into the consulting world, and I do a lot on rethinking professional learning and focusing on those issues that are greatly impact our students, like polarization or sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm mostly doing now.
Okay, good enough. And you wrote here that you're co-founder of something called the Educators Lab. What's that?
So that's where we do a lot of the professional learning work. So I kind of consider myself a change consultant. We have another book called The Startup Teacher Playbook. I learned a lot because I kind of have a foot in the social startup world, if you will.
Sure.
I've been able to learn a lot from that space and bring those methodologies back to teachers so that they can materialize the great ideas they have for the classroom.
Boy, that is excellent. And I want to give some credit here because Brian just had stuff come up. He couldn't be with us today. He's the co-author of your book, Preventing Polarization, which, by the way, you can find at let me get the exact website here. I want to make sure I have it. It's Times 10 Publications at www.1010publications.com. Or you also have a website of your own, preventingpolarization.com. But Brian couldn't be here with us today. How'd you guys hook up? Where'd you meet?
So, we're both kind of from rural parts of the U.S. I'm from Virginia. He is from Illinois, and we actually mm-hmm. taught social studies together in Switzerland. And then we both, after
wow.
some stints abroad, we returned back to a very divided America, and we connected and we're like, we need to do something, both of us having experience as civics teachers. Brian's currently still a civics teacher, and it's a product of that.
And I have to say that both of you, both you, Michelle, and Brian, when you come back to the United States, both of you seem to go to the flattest possible places. you in Florida and him in central Illinois. What is why
well,
is
yeah,
the reason
no, when,
for that? Yeah. Yeah.
No, when
Switzerland,
I went
too flat.
I went back,
yeah. Yeah.
No, when I went back, I'm actually from Virginia, so I am more in the Blue Ridge.
Okay,
so
I'll give you a break.
Being here in Florida is because of my brother actually moved into this house 6 weeks ago. So if we had talked 2 months ago, I hadn't really expected anything that's happening right now.
Well, it's good. Just have a great time, okay? Because it couldn't be
yes,
a better time
you.
To go to Tampa, I got to tell you. And Brian, I know you're going to listen to this, and I'm sorry you're not here with us today, but you just enjoy Illinois, man, okay, in the winter. Nothing like Peoria in the winter, as they like to say. Okay, preventing polarization, 50 strategies for teaching kids. I love this, about empathy, politics, and civic responsibility. Wow. Okay, this is wonderful. You were a civics teacher. You were a social studies teacher. Talk, and you certainly know what's going on. Tell us, Michelle, what do you hear what's going on in civics classrooms today? This is what obviously prompted you folks to write the book.
Yeah, it's actually not just civics classrooms. In doing professional learning, a disturbing amount of teachers have basically said they kind of feel like they have to walk on eggshells when facilitating conversations. That they're kind of discouraged from talking about current events and real-world issues. And, of course, I think there's no better, you know, playground or practice field than the civics classroom. But, yeah, I just have heard from a disturbing amount of teachers that we're kind of avoiding or being discouraged from having really important conversations that our students want to have. And so that's kind of what also helped us to spark some of the ideas behind this book so that we could start having some of these conversations or bring to the table the importance of why these conversations need to happen and why it's, you know, not acceptable to avoid them, why it's not acceptable to just avoid them.
Who do they say is creating the challenge? Is it the kids or is it the administration? Is it the school board? Where do you see, where's the focal point of the challenge here?
This isn't in the book, but usually when talking with teachers, I think they feel, not necessarily from the students, but from parents, from school board, from administrators. So it's coming from a variety of angles. I also think sometimes it just feels like, you know, society at large. We have a lot of teachers leaving the classroom right now. And I think
yes, we do.
Overall, teachers don't necessarily feel valued, and I don't know if they feel trusted to do their jobs. And then I think specifically when it comes to civics, and I imagine this is true for other social studies subjects. The curriculum tends to be quite formal. I taught in Virginia, so my experience is there. And, you know, we have the standards of learning, and it really focuses a lot on memorization. And, for instance, in something like the civics classroom, and this is something we talk about in the book, you have the body of civics, which is kind of just, you know, the mechanics of how it functions. And then you have the soul of civics, which is that passion and drive. You need to be engaged so that you care about your community and want to take action. And the thing is the two go together. So, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about, why don't, you know, just stick to the curriculum. And it's not easy to do that. And just to give an example in civics, you know, you'll talk to students about the Electoral College. Most students aren't happy to learn about the Electoral College. It kind of makes them angry. They're shocked that we still have this in place.
So am I.
And then we'll talk about things like running for president, and the kids are like, okay, how do you do that? And then we get into election costs. Well, the last election was, you know, over $14 billion. And then the students are like, well, where do they get the money from? And then we start talking about lobbies, and then they learn about Citizens United. And so they have emotions that come with learning about civics. And I think the thing is we try to separate this kind of knowledge piece from the emotional piece. And this is kind of what sparked us to want to talk more about social emotional learning in terms of civics, because it is an emotional topic. And I think we need to be able to address that so that kids can talk about these things because they want to.
Well, let's segue into that in terms of social emotional learning. And that's by the way, that's a wonderful point of view, how the polarization is a social emotional aspect of education. Okay. And it seems to focus. I do agree with you here more in civics classes because kids obviously watch TV and they hear their parents talking over the table, and some parents are conservative and some parents are liberal, and they hear about the arguments and all that sort of thing. And it just overflows into school. Okay. And I have to say this, as you well know, every kid is entitled to their political opinion. No one would argue that. Okay. And that's healthy to have a good discourse. The thing is to have a healthy discourse. And that's what we're talking about here. When you say SEL, how do you put that into the polarization challenge?
Well, so some of it is about, self-regulating. Some of it's about managing emotions. So for instance, sometimes when a certain issue comes up, your immediate response might to be angry, or it might be because of what you have heard from, what other sources to say, well, this is wrong and this is right. And usually with a lot of issues, it's complex. And kids need to have an opportunity to kind of dig deeper and dissect the issues and explore them. And so in today's world, and I think this would probably be a good example that sure. Most adults even run into with each other, is we have this, and I think since we have this presidential system, sometimes it's this presidential two-party system, sometimes it seems we kind of have this team mentality behind the party that, we vote for. And it causes us to maybe resort to bumper sticker politics, and it's like, well, I'm right and you're wrong. And this is a very ego-driven way to talk about things, and it doesn't facilitate dialogue either. And so, for instance, social-emotional learning is necessary because we need to be able to take a step back, reflect on what our goals are. So, for instance, if we're talking about a public health issue, like when COVID, in the middle of the pandemic, I remember being kind of shocked because I felt like the conversation was like, okay, you need to pick health or wealth, And I'm like, shouldn't the conversation be, how do we have a healthy population that maintains its livelihood? Shouldn't it be health and wealth? And so, when we go in and don't kind of reflect on our goals and what we want to achieve, we shut down the dialogue. And this is important, right? Like something like this is practicing humility of like, okay, I want my goals. I don't know what the right answer is, but I want to have a conversation so we can figure out what might be the best thing to do. And then I need to be open enough to kind of tolerate other people's, opinions or suggestions about the issue. But in this way, we can have a thoughtful dialogue and move forward. And so a lot of this goes into just regulating our emotions, being reflective of how we're responding to people, and ensuring we have kind of the soft skills needed to facilitate or engage in healthy dialogue.
Couldn't agree with you more. My question to you, well, actually, maybe let me ask you a question first. Okay, who do you want to read this book? The book, again, is Preventing Polarization. That's the name of the website, .com, preventingpolarization.com. Okay, who do you want to read the book? And I want to go back to what you just said about SEL when you finish answering that question. Go ahead.
Sure. So we would be happy for any and all teachers to read it, or even parents. I think that's the thing is, when we talked about kind of the soul of civics, being civically engaged,
I love that.
Minded, this is something that you need to build over time. This is something that we can, any adult, and so therefore all educators, we can help our students to feel, more civically minded, because the kids need to make the link that, being an engaged citizen, being involved in civics, being involved in policy, this is one of your best outlets for systems change. And this, whatever policies in place, whether it's at the local level, state, or national, this is going to shape your day-to-day. And, the world has a lot going on, so you need to understand the relevance of we each have a part to play in shaping the type of world we want to live in. And so we wrote this because we wanted to be able to engage with all teachers, or we wanted to kind of spark a conversation with any and all teachers or parents about what we might do to make sure that our kids, A, understand the relevance of civics, so that they are more civic-minded, but also to make sure that they have those basic building blocks needed that usually coincide with social-emotional learning so that they can engage in conversations. Because we need communication. We need to be tolerant of various perspectives. We need to understand how to explore issues. We need to understand how to build consensus. And these are things that take time. I don't think a one-and-done civics course is going to be able to accomplish all of that.
No, it is not. But we're on the same wavelength here. So let me go back to what you're saying about SEL, which is very important these days. Okay, I can't tell you. Everybody knows how important it is. All right. How does a social studies teacher and I know you have this in your book, and I want you to talk about it as part of your strategies. How does a social studies teacher literally, who really doesn't know much about teaching SEL, okay, officially, how do they incorporate it in there? Okay,
well,
how do you want the SEL to fit in? You know where I'm going here.
So, I mean, for me, SEL is just skill building. It should be naturally infused in any curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
I do have to say, too,
for my undergrad,
I majored in anthropology, and at the time, people were like, what do you do with anthropology? Well, for me, anthropology is studying how to empathize with people and how to notice people. And then, of course, you have courses in sociology, and that's studying patterns in society and in movements and, you know, how people respond to things. So there's a lot in there. And also too, I think, you know, I remember with a social studies certification, I was able to teach psychology as well. So you have courses with that. And I think, you know, with infusing social emotional learning, I mean, facilitate a debate, you know, have a conversation. All of these skills are there. You know, it's not, I mean, I think that's the thing. If you have a curriculum where students are just supposed to memorize facts, sure, then it would be hard to infuse social-emotional learning. But if students are playing a game or doing a simulation, really anything that's hands-on, there should be a way to help them to reflect on the process and how they learned and how they engaged. And I think this is where kids build their skills, because we're being intentional of saying, you know, did you feel like you communicated well? You know, did you feel like you were able to respond well to others? Did you feel, you know, but I think it's kind of this sort of metacognitive process of just ensuring that students have the opportunity to reflect on experience and what they felt and how they grew by doing certain activities.
Right. It's all just a mix. And I love the things you cover in your book, and I just want to keep pushing the book. All right. Cultivating critical thinking. Okay. Digesting information and considering its source, which is media literacy, is the way I call it. Understanding the impact of their actions, which I think is very important. There, I'm going to talk to you about empathy in a second. Exploring how to handle tough conversations. Making group work a norm, which I'm going to ask you about that. And being able to get involved. When you say making group work a norm, okay, why'd you put that in there? You want the teacher off the center of the stage, which I think is good, by the way. But what were you talking about? What did you mean when you put it in there?
A few of the skills that we mention in the book are collective leadership. We mentioned change making. We mentioned empathy. So we actually talk about apathy and empathy. And the thing is if we want, we just talked, you know, we had just talked about helping students to communicate and to understand perspectives and to build consensus. You can't do that alone. Like, I mean, so of course you should be doing more group work, because if you can't practice, how do you expect, you know, children to form into adults that are good at these skills? And for me, the classroom should be a low-stakes environment where we learn how to work with one another, whether it's on projects, whether it's on, you know, discussing an issue or whatever. So I think it's critical we make group work a norm so that students get that opportunity. I mean, there's very few jobs where you work in a silo. So, of course, I think it should be a norm.
Yeah, it should be, and I hope it is. I wanted to ask you this, and this is key to me. You're in Florida today, but you live in Switzerland, okay? At least you're there for a while. And talk to me about the difference. You must see a difference. Your kids may maybe go to Swiss schools. I don't know. Okay, do you see the same thing happening about the polarization in the European countries? And you can use Switzerland as the example.
So actually, I wouldn't use Switzerland as an example. So my girls do go to the public school in Switzerland, which is quite different than the system here. But I think that's a whole other conversation. So Switzerland is one of the few countries with a direct democracy. So if there is an issue, people can get X amount of signatures, and there will be a votation to which people directly vote on if, you know, they want something passed or not. And so therefore, people really dissected the issue. Right. So it can be about I don't know, do we want hormones in food, something like this. And people are really, it's one at a time, right? So people can really form an opinion on this. I mean, most countries have representative democracies. So the polarization isn't just happening in the U.S. I mean, you look at Brazil, Italy, France, U.K. I mean, it's happening in a lot of places. So
right.
This isn't just an American issue. I think some of the, and we say this in the book, you know, we didn't come to say why the polarization is happening everywhere. I think this would take years of research and data, but we do know that it's happening, and we do know that we need to try something because our kids are suffering. Like, our kids feel the polarization. They know it's tense. I think we kind of don't have the time, if you will, to get all the research before we try and help them. But that said, I think part of the reason we have polarization is, you know, the world is changing very, very quickly, and it's hard to adapt, you know. So I think that's causing a lot of problems with people just trying to figure out what's next. So, just to give climate as an example, I mean, the U.S. is very polarized on this issue, you know.
Yes, it is.
I still have people that talk about, like, oh, it doesn't exist. And it's like, I don't know why this is still a conversation right now.
I don't know
so
either.
I think that's the thing, is like, we don't get to choose what's happening in the world. And we need to respond though to what is happening, which means trusting our experts and whatnot. But, and I think this is part of the reason why the polarization is happening, because the world's changing fast and we want things to move quickly, we have a lot of people that I think are being left behind or not considered or who don't want the change. And so it's just this weird kind of conflict, I think, that's happening in a lot of countries where we're seeing more nationalism in places and protectionism. So, yeah, I mean, that's probably not a sufficient answer, but it's one of those questions that's kind of so loaded, you don't know where to begin.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, where do you begin exactly? You know, when you look at your book, do you consider your book an SEL book, a social-emotional learning book, or do you consider it a book for history teachers? Where do you put it?
Oh, no, definitely social-emotional learning. I mean, it's not just for social studies teachers at all. I think a lot of the things that we talk about, too, like if you're an English teacher, even a math teacher, like let's say you talk about the value of stats or, you know, exponential growth, something like this. There's a lot of, and especially in relation to current events and questions that kids ask, right. I think there's a lot of emotion behind things. And I think one of the other things, too, like we have a section on mindful information consumption. And at this point as well, we don't get to choose where students consume their information. So, for instance, if, you know, they're getting stuff off Instagram and maybe it's a meme, you know, do they know how to dissect that? Do they know what's accurate, what's not? How do we help them to do that? Or if they're watching things on TikTok, right? Like, how are we helping them to know what's accurate, you know? And I think this is something that all teachers are kind of struggling with, of dealing with this, like, you know, this era of information overload. We have so much. Tech has disrupted literally everything. Students are getting information and ideas from absolutely everywhere. And
yep.
I think a lot of this social-emotional learning, this piece, is impacting most subject areas.
You know, it's interesting. One of the reasons that the public education was created in this country was to create good citizens. That was the purpose. They realized that if you're putting the vote in the hands of the people have to actually know what's going on. And so an education system started to get created. Okay, so that people did understand, which is actually, in my opinion, the reason they started the Electoral College, because they didn't think the people were ready yet. We're ready now, but we still have that stupid thing. Okay, it's just amazing. What I love about your book, okay, is that this is really what the essence of public education is about. It's about creating civic responsibility. Okay, yeah, we have to teach the three R's. Okay, yeah, we can do that. Okay, but the more important thing is to get kids ready to be good citizens of their country. All right, that's what it's about. All right, and this is what your book is about. It's about politics. It's about civic responsibility and the things we need to do in a classroom, okay, to make that happen. All right, and that's why I think it's just so darn important. And, you know, you know, your book is called Preventing Polarization, all right? It's not called Stopping Polarization, all right? Because there is polarization now. Can we change what's there now? Okay, you see hope that we can change things now, or is this going to take 5 or 10 years? What do you think?
Oh, no, this will take forever. Even preventing polarization, it's already here, you know?
Yeah, it is.
So I think that's the thing is, but we need to try something. And so I think just looking at our own classroom, if you're only noticing that those, you know, those extreme views are the only ones that are being discussed, I feel like when you talk to most people are somewhere actually in the middle. And I think people would feel better if they understood and we had more of conversations about issues, about where we want to go as a nation. And I think that's the thing is, can we prevent it? I'm not sure, but I would sure like to try. And I think that's what we wanted to do with the book.
Yeah, yeah, we got to make it happen. And one other thing, you know, you want this to be read by educators. Did you read it? Or did you write it? I know Brian teaches high school. Okay, so did you write it with the high school teacher and student in mind, or did you write it for the pre-K-12 teacher in mind? Just curious.
So I would say I taught middle and high school, so I would say it's a bit more with that teacher in mind. But my mom taught third, and she read the book, and she's like, this is great. Because we really tried, for instance, on strategies that kind of cover some of the skills we talk about, I think there's something that any teacher can adapt. I mean, teachers, you know, they know their craft. So if they like an idea, they'll implement it.
That's good stuff, I got to tell you.
For them. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys did something good here. All right, you Michelle Blanchet and Brian Dieters. I mean, you guys put something together, and I just hope it's a terrific addition to what's a growing library. What we need with schools to get back to what schools really mean. So, Michelle, thank you so much. And I got to tell you, enjoy Florida. You and I are on the same time zone today. It's 3:27. Okay.
Yeah, thank when you so much.
Home? Yeah, when are you heading home?
I head back on Monday, Sunday. I arrive Monday.
Good enough. Yeah. How do you fly home through France? Where do you go?
I think I actually fly back through London.
Good enough. Okay, give my regards to good old London. All right, have a safe trip. It's wonderful to talk to you. It's wonderful to know you. Okay, and thank you.
You as
so
well.
Much.
Thanks so much for this. We appreciate it. All right, take
care. Are you kidding me? My pleasure. You take care. Bye bye. Hi, Michelle Blanchet, everybody, okay, who is the author, along with her co-author, Brian Dieters, who, again, unfortunately couldn't be with us today here, okay, Preventing Polarization. Their website is preventingpolarization.com. You can also go, and I do recommend this, you go over to 10 publications, that's the number 10, 10publications.com. My good friend Mark Barnes, the publisher over there, and he's produced a whole series of books that are just absolutely fabulous, that really look at public education in a different way. And this is just one of them. Okay, so go over there and enjoy it. All right, it's good stuff. All right, we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. We do good stuff too, and everything we do is free for you. So please go over, check it out. Thanks for listening.